A Simple Thing, written by Iridan, read by Marianas. Chapter 20. Batir. It was hard to pull his helmet back on and go to the throne room, to the afternoon court and the business of running Boba's little but growing empire, but it wasn't hard for the reasons Din had gotten used to. Din had gotten used to fighting with himself every time he took the helmet off or put it back on. He'd gotten used to feeling like an imposter, like a liar. But climbing out of the bath, after he and Boba had finally gotten around to using it as a bath and not a particularly slippery battlefield, and putting his helmet back on once they'd made it to Boba's rooms again was different. Still difficult. If Din hadn't already decided that Paz should be the next to hear that Din was Darmanda, he would have told Boba then and there. He hadn't recognized his own reflection in the helmet's polished shine. It would have been easy to say it. He'd held his tongue, dressed beside Boba, pulled on his armor piece by piece, sealed the helmet shut over his freshly shaved stranger's face, and then he'd gone back down with Boba. It shouldn't have felt different. He'd done it half a dozen times now, made the walk down from Boba's rooms after letting Boba take control. But it was different, and Din couldn't figure out why. Nothing's changed, he thought. He and Boba hadn't even done anything serious, despite Boba's teasing. They'd splashed around in the water like unruly foundlings, and Boba had given Din what was probably his first proper shave in his entire life. That wasn't anything that should have made Din feel unbalanced, on edge, sore inside like something in his life had been dislocated and something else had snapped into place. But I do feel that way. Like the aftermath of an earthquake or recovering from a head injury. Din was unsteady. Like he couldn't trust the ground or couldn't trust his feet to know that the ground was solid. Nothing has changed. But everything had. Walking back to the throne room with Boba side by side had felt intimate. They'd walked with only a hand span of space between them. The way Din's helmet kept brushing against the bare corners of his jaw felt like a caress. Even the looseness in his muscles, Din's ever-present aches and pains temporarily soothed away by warm water, had been new. And, Din thought to himself, settling deeper into his usual place at the base of the stairs, armed with another smoky Rilish drink and his Beskar, he keeps looking at me. It wasn't that Boba had ever ignored Din, any of the dozen times Din had now stood guard for him at the foot of the stairs. Boba had a warrior's way of knowing who was in a room with him and where they were. Din's teachers had called it a battle sense. A smart fighter always knew where his allies and enemies stood. Boba tracked Din from the throne, just like he tracked Fennec and Nora and the guards on duty, the visitors that came to stand in front of him to ask a favor and the ones who skulked around the edges of the room. But that's just common sense and old habits, Din thought. This is something else. He watched Boba right back. Half a hundred other sentients were between Din and Boba, the throne room busy and boisterous, but Din still had a pretty clear line of sight. Boba was sprawled on his throne, languid and in control, listening with all the appearance of rapt attention to a blonde-furred male Bothan as he gave Boba a report about the rumors of pike movements in the spaceports of Bastine. But appearances could be deceiving, and Beskar could hide a lot. Boba looked like he was paying sole attention to the Bothan, but he wasn't. At least, I don't think he is. It was hard to tell for sure, because Boba had pulled his helmet on beside Din as they'd prepared to leave his rooms. Boba's visor was aimed at the Bothan. But I feel like I'm being watched. Din wasn't being watched in the way that made the hairs on the back of his neck stand up, that made him want to reach for his blaster or pull his cloak away from his hip so that everyone could see that he was armed. He wasn't even being watched like a tribe elder watched over the foundlings, protective and calm. But he was being watched, and Din could see almost everyone else's face, he knew who was looking at him and who wasn't. By now, Din had been seen around the palace so often that he'd stopped being a novelty. Mandalorians were rare, but Din was a regular now, just another feature of the palace, like Nura or Kashyyyk or Fennec. Just another part of Boba's crew, unremarkable until Boba needed him. A few of the palace's guests would glance over at Din now and then to check and see if he moved. Din moving was a sign that somebody was probably about to start shooting, after all. But no one really looked at Din anymore. It has to be Boba. A visor could hide a lot, even the true direction of one's eyes. Din had used that to advantage before. Boba had many of the same habits. But it's different, and I don't know why. Why is he looking at me? If Din could see Boba's face, he'd understand. He'd gotten decently good at reading Boba's expression. They'd spent enough time unmasked in each other's company, after all. Din leaned back, pressing his shoulders deliberately into the stone. The pain that bloomed behind his eyes was sweet and grounding, bone deep. He hissed, too low to be picked up by his vocoder, and rolled his shoulders. Boba's helmet twitched. It was a small movement, like the ripple of scales as a canyon crate shook off a fly. If Din hadn't been watching Boba so intently, he would have missed it. But he was watching, so he caught it, and Din's eyes widened. Oh, Din realized, heat flickering low in his stomach. He's looking at me. Boba wasn't looking at Din like an enemy through a scope or even a warrior keeping track of his allies. He was looking, and Din knew instinctively that underneath his green and red helmet, Boba's eyes were dark. Din swallowed. That's why it's different, he thought. Din had been wanted before. Other beings saw the armor, saw Din's skills, his strength, and wanted to have it. Have him. Xian had been the most obvious about it. Her looks and sideways glances had come with plenty of comments about what she'd like to do to Din or what she'd like Din to do to her, but there had been interest over the years. Omera, interested in Din's strength and his care for the kid. A Deveronian who'd been impressed with Din's handling of a bounty on Ord Mantell and had invited Din back to his room for the night. They'd been considering looks in cantinas and Tuca calls in the streets. Din usually ignored most of them. He wasn't interested in rolling around with strangers, and other beings' interest in his armor had always made him nervous. He'd never been able to tell who had genuinely wanted him and who had just wanted the chance to bag a Mandalorian. Who'd wanted to take off Din's helmet while he slept in their bed. But Boba knows me without the armor. Maybe that's why it was different, standing here with Boba's eyes on him. Boba knew Din without the helmet on, without any of the armor between them, and still seemed to want Din anyway. The heat flickering in Din's gut spread and strengthened. He swallowed again, lifting his chin a little. Boba's helmet didn't move. The Bothan was still talking. But he's looking. Din could feel it. All of his instincts rose to meet that gaze. The heat in his belly threatened to become a wildfire licking at Din's ribs. All of his skin felt tight, sensitive. His bare face tingled faintly. It was Din who broke first, looking away sharply, suddenly shy. It was knowing that Boba was looking, that Boba wanted him, that Boba was the only one in the room who knew him, who had put his hands on Din's jaw. It was too much. And it wasn't enough, either. Din knew Boba right back. He wanted Boba's hand on him again. This is... I don't flirt, Din thought, a little desperately. He fixed his attention on the bar, manned for the afternoon by Geeta, and took a few breaths. Din didn't flirt or court or whatever it was that Boba was doing. Usually Din ignored those who were looking at him with desire. It was safer that way. But I want Boba too. Din liked him. Even when Boba was being condescending, when he was teasing Din about his inexperience, when he was trying to make Din blush, Din liked him and wanted him. But he didn't do this. Din finished his drink in two gulps, tilting his helmet up just enough to grab the straw. Nora had made this one for him, too, before she'd turned the bar over for the afternoon and evening shifts. Its smoky sweetness and the burn of alcohol helped settle in some. He risked another glance at Boba. Boba hadn't looked away. His helmet hadn't shifted, but Din could still feel his eyes, and Din flushed even though no one could see him do it. He wouldn't look away, Din thought, red down to his throat. Boba liked seeing Din out of his depth too much to look away. He liked pushing Din. Din's face tingled with heat. He wondered what Boba saw. If Boba was looking at Din in his armor, pleased that he'd won Din over to his side, or if he was imagining what Din looked like underneath it. The smooth skin of Din's cheeks, the bruises across his back. They'd made arrangements to spend the night together up in Boba's rooms, and this time it wasn't for a sparring match or a flogging or anything Din was familiar with. He kept hearing Boba's voice, light and teasing. If I'm going to teach you how to suck a cock, Jerrica, I'd rather take my time. How does he make something sound like a threat and a promise at the same time, Din thought, his blush deepening, spreading down his throat to his chest. His skin pulled tight, heat flickered, his cock twitched. That, Din thought, looking away, jaw working underneath his helmet, is enough of that. This was the throne room, the seat of Boba's power. This wasn't the safety of his rooms or the watery quiet of the bath or even the closeness of a ship's hold. This was where Boba worked. Where Din worked. Getting an erection in one's place of employment, Din thought, still furiously red underneath his armor, has got to be against someone's code. Din had agreed to follow the rules when he'd signed on with the guild. There hadn't been any clauses in the contract about, well, about this sort of thing. But Din had agreed to follow a certain standard of behavior. Boba hadn't made Din sign a contract either, but they'd still set up some boundaries. They'd agreed to keep what they did together in Boba's room separate from this. Fine, Din thought in Boba's direction. You win this one. He abandoned his post by the stairs, trudging over to the bar. He wasn't sure what to do to get himself under control. A pinch or a bitten lip was just as likely to fan the heat spreading through all of Din's limbs as it was to help him focus. It had all gotten tangled up in his head. Pleasure and pain, focus and indulgence. It didn't help that Din had been so on edge over the last few days, between time in the desert with Ashek, his argument with Boba, his search in Mos Entha. He'd only been back in the palace for a day, with hardly any rest in between. And I'm not going to get much rest tonight, either, Din thought. His blood jumped again, remembering Boba's promised threat, and he shook his head irritably. He felt Boba's attention slide off him. Bastard's probably smug. Boba'd won, after all. Din had looked away first. Scowling, Din made it to the bar and held up two fingers. Geeta, as professional while she was working, as she was prickly when off-duty, only nodded and slipped him another drink. She didn't give him a straw, so Din took his old one out of the drink Nora had made for him and returned to his place by the stairs. Boba was entirely focused on the Bothan now. Din sipped his drink, Tihara this time, strong enough to burn at the back of Din's mouth, underneath his eyes, and forced himself to pay attention to get back on task. He was in control of his body. Din flexed his toes, then his fingers. He surreptitiously rotated his ankles and shook out his wrists. He rolled his shoulders and resisted the urge to press his back against the stone behind him. By the time he finished his tihar, Din had managed to get himself back under control. The heat in his belly was gone. His face still felt strange underneath his helmet, too sensitive, but there was nothing Din could do about that, and Boba had turned entirely back to business. Din was relieved. He was sure that Boba would tease him later, but Din could handle it in the safety of Boba's rooms. Here, no, there were too many others around. Afternoon court wound down with less drama than morning court had. None of the smugglers who came to give Boba his share of their profits had tried to cheat him, and none of the beings who were paying Boba for protection had any complaints. The afternoon bled into the evening before long, court finished for the day, and Fennec appeared at Din's elbow. Din leaned down so she could talk without being overheard. "Any trouble this afternoon?" he asked. I thought I was supposed to come find you. Fennec smiled like a knife. No trouble, she said. I thought I'd come grab you before Noora went home for the day. Want to eat with us? We're over here. She pointed to a corner where Noora was, in fact, sitting with several plates of various food spread out in front of her. Din looked back at the throne. Bobo was standing now at the base of the dais, helmet tucked underneath his arm while he listened to something one of the guards had to say. He was done ruling for the day. All right, Din said. Lead the way. Fennec eeled through the crowd, Din trailing along behind her. At the table she'd commandeered, Noora was scrolling down on a datapad and absentmindedly eating what looked like Mandalorian hanshun, flaky bread stuffed with spices and meat and vegetables. She'd eaten half of one and had gotten absorbed by whatever she was reading, the forgotten half of the hanshun steaming in her hand. Din smiled and sat down across from her, letting Fennec take the spot at his left. Fennec took her helmet off and reached for some food for herself. She took a hanshun to match Noora's, a scoop of brown rice and a heap of red chuba stew, which Din could smell even through his helmet. "Want any?" Noora asked, setting her datapad down as she realized Din was there. She gestured with her own hanshun. "It's the boss's recipe. It's really good." "Really spicy," Fennec muttered, taking an enormous bite of rice to soak up whatever was in the hanshun, which had made spice tears gather at the corners of her eyes. "I'll take some for later," Din assured Noora. "Don't worry about it. Take what you want." "What?" Fennec said lightly, getting over her encounter with Heteram enough to reach out and wrap her knuckles against the side of Din's head. He leaned out of the way with a scowl she couldn't see. "You get shy on us all of a sudden?" "I'm not shy," Din grumbled, pushing away the way Boba's gaze had made him feel, exposed and vulnerable. He wasn't shy. He never had been. He was new at all of this, yes, but if he took his helmet off, Fennec and Noora would be able to see what Boba had done, and Din wasn't sure he wanted to share that with them. Fennec knew that Din and Boba had an arrangement. That was fine. From the way Boba talked about her, and from what Din had been able to put together sharing a palace with her, Fennec was the type to figure everything out sooner or later. That was her job. Keeping her from drawing her own conclusions, from fitting together scraps of information, was probably impossible. But there was a difference between letting Fennec piece together the odds and ends of Din and Boba's arrangement and showing it to her firsthand. Din's face, his freshly shaved cheeks and sensitive skin, the memory of Boba's thumb at the corner of his jaw. "It's mine," Din thought, unease prickling through him. The way Boba's hand had felt, skin pressed to skin, the gleam of the razor out of the corner of his eye. Those things were Din's, not Fennec's, and he didn't want to share them. There was a question in Fennec's eyes. Din scowled harder. "There's a lot of people still in here," Din said, reaching for a plausible reason that also wasn't a lie. The throne room hadn't emptied by any means. Afternoon court usually tipped over into at least an hour or two of dinner and partying now that Boba had the clank and the influence to support such things. Half of Boba's influence came from deals and bargains struck in the palace's halls after dark, and a good third of his clank flowed through the bar before it made his way into his accounts. The palace's visitors liked to stay and eat and drink. Smugglers would arrange to move goods off-planet over a meal, bounties would go out with a toast, and Boba would get a cut of all of it. And while that sort of business model was good practice for a cartel, it meant that Fennec and Noora weren't the only ones lingering after the main business of the day was done. "Oh," Fennec said, finally pulling her hand away. Her expression cleared. She believed in. "You've said before that your particular brand of Mandalorian is traditional. You don't show your face to strangers?" To anyone, Din thought, but didn't say it. He only nodded, affirming Fennec, then paused, struck by a thought he'd been trying to ignore all day, ever since Boba had brought up his father's father and his people over breakfast. Fennec, Din realized, knows a little about everything. "How many Mandalorians have you met over the years?" Din asked. Fennec had been an assassin for as long as he could remember. Her name had come up in the syndicates and the guild alike. He didn't know how long she'd been working, but it had been a long time. Longer than Din, who'd been hunting for over 15 years. If the question caught Fennec by surprise, she didn't show it. She took another bite of hanshun, chewed thoughtfully for a minute, then shrugged. "A few," she said. Back in the Clone Wars, you couldn't turn around without tripping over a Mandalorian bounty hunter. Most of them were decent to work with. If I had to work as part of a crew, Mandalorians were better than Trandoshans or droids. I knew a Braylor, a Hokan, a handful of Skiratas. Bavine was okay. Jango, Boba's father. You knew Boba's father? By reputation, Fennec said. I've worked with a few who'd worked with him. Braylor was good, but Jango'd cut down on his hunting by the time I got established enough to compete for higher-level bounties. Then, after the Clone Wars ended and the Empire took over... And there were fewer and fewer Mandalorian hunters, Din muttered, thinking. He wondered how many of the Baroye Fennec had known had gone underground, had tried to stand up to the Empire and died for it, how many had made it back to the safety of their tribes. Din didn't recognize any of the names Fennec had tossed out, aside from Jango Fett and Skirata. The clan names she'd mentioned weren't any of the ones Din knew among the coverts, except for Skirata. There had been a Wenyan Skirata among the Elder Warriors for a while. It was Wenyan and his wife Adka who'd adopted Annika back when they'd all been orphans and foundlings. Now she was the only Skirata left in the covert. Or she was, at least, Din thought. He didn't know if Annika had survived. He pushed that thought away. Fennec inclined her head. Fewer good hunters in general, she said. The Empire turned any half-decent bounty hunter they could find loose after the remaining Jedi. The payouts, if you managed to bag one, were big, but none of the Jedi who'd survived the initial purge survived by accident. Din blinked, surprised. "Did you?" he started, then stopped himself with a grimace. Asking about the bounties another hunter, even one who'd done more killing than hunting, like Fennec, may or may not have taken, wasn't always polite. Din was allied with the Jedi now. His kid was going to be a Jedi. He wasn't sure that he wanted to know if Fennec had ever hunted any Jedi, if she'd caught them, killed them. She hadn't only been a hunter, after all. But Fennec only shook her head with a faint smile, unbothered. No, she said. Thought about it a few times. It was hard not to think about taking one of those contracts with how high some of the bounties were, but I've always believed that it's hard to spend your credits when you're dead. I saw what the Jedi could do during the Clone Wars. I'm good, but the Jedi... Din nodded. He hadn't known that Ferris Olin was a Jedi, but he'd seen Olin's puck sit untouched in Greef Karga's records for almost a decade. The bounty on him was enormous. If Din had managed to bring him in, it wouldn't just have fed the tribe, it would have given them enough credits to buy their own planet. But bounties only got that astronomically high for one reason. Risk and reward were twins, Thalor had said once. Olin's bounty was so high because nothing short of a full-scale Imperial assault was guaranteed to take him out, let alone one Mandalorian in Durasteel armor. Karga hadn't wanted to risk his best hunters on such an impossible score, no matter the fact that Din, in his younger and wilder days, would certainly have tried. And died, Din thought, putting together what Fennec was saying. When the Empire had started to put out bounties on surviving Jedi, Baroya had probably jumped at the chance to hunt them. Jedi were thin on the ground these days, thinner even than Mandalorians, but that didn't mean that those who died in the purges and the hunts hadn't taken some Baroya down with them. By the time you'd come after me in the sands, I hadn't seen a Mandalorian hunter in a long time, Fennec continued. Boba was the last one I'd seen, and we all thought he'd died. He didn't tolerate competition in Jabba's outfit. Din snorted. None of us do, he said. There was a reason most Alore tried to put a sector or two between coverts with active hunters. Fighting over bounties was common when there weren't enough bounties to go around. Fennec inclined her head and took another bite of her hanshun, finishing it off. What were they like? Din asked, before he could talk himself out of asking. The other hunters, I mean. That got him a hard stare. Fennec's eyes searched his helmet, but Din made himself look back impassively. Boba, Din elaborated, choosing his words, has his own opinions, as does Bo-Katan. He does, Fennec relented. She shrugged. They were, well, Hokan was a mean son of a skug, but he was competent. I heard that the Republic did for him back at the start of the Clone Wars. Braylor, she ran with Boba's father, I think. She was hard, but she had her code. She showed me how to splice into Republic comms once. I did my best to avoid the Skiratas. They were around after the Clone Wars for a while, very clannish. They didn't like anybody who wasn't one of them, and they didn't share bounties very well either. I did a few jobs under Lyra Bevin before I caught the wrong end of a pulse rifle on Dixun. He was another one who ran with Django back in the old days. Bevin was fair, made sure we all got our cut, even us new bloods. I avoided the Ordo brothers, too. They were only after glory. Din nodded, taking each name into memory. Ordo, Hokan, Braylor, Bevin. Names he'd heard before. Names Boba had said when he described the purges and the clans who'd been wiped out. But not names Din knew. There were more of us once, he thought. He'd known that, logically, but the truth of it was gnawing at him now. Had been for a while, whenever Dan had taken a moment to himself to think about it. It had started on the light cruiser, because Din hadn't anything else to think about aside from how much his head hurt and how frustrating it was to be unable to make a closed fist with his bad hand. There were Mandalorians, entire clans and houses and tribes, who'd lived and died outside of what Din had thought was the only creed, the way of the Mandalore. And not all of these other Mandalorians had been in hiding, either. They'd lived on Mandalore and Concordia, on Onderon and Dantooine and Concord Dawn. They'd worked as soldiers and bounty hunters and mercenaries. They'd hunted and fought and lived in cities and spaceports. So what? Din thought to himself, uncomfortable, his appetite fading despite the delicious smell of the chewy stew. Were we hiding from? The Empire. They had always been hidden from the Empire. But the Empire hadn't always existed. Din had been saved from his overrun village during the Clone Wars. He didn't remember how long, exactly, he'd lived in the covert before the Clone Wars ended and the Empire had risen out of their ashes, but it couldn't have been that long. But we were hiding even then, he thought. And we stayed hidden, even when the Empire died and the New Republic took over. Not that the New Republic had won. The Empire still existed in the remnants, prowling around the edges of the Outer Rim. The warriors who'd saved Din's life had fought the Separatists, and in those first early days, the Separatists had hunted them right back. The first raids Din remembered running from, holding hands with Paz and Annika as they fled through the dark tunnels and alleyways, were Separatist raids. And then the Seps had been cleared away, and the Empire had pursued anyone who could fight but wouldn't do it for the Empire. The Empire had purged, had destroyed entire coverts, and then Mandalore itself, had stolen Beskar wherever Beskar could be found. But we were hidden before the Empire. Din's heart sank in his chest. He had a horrible feeling that he knew why his people had been in hiding for so long. These other Mandalorians that you knew, Din said, trying to keep his voice even. You knew them after the Mandalorian Civil War, right? Right, Fennec said. That was, 15-20 years before the Clone Wars kicked off. The Mandalorian Wars were long over. That was why there were so many Baroia. Most of them were exiles, I think. Driven off Mandalore because they wouldn't knuckle under and put their armor down. Din's heart sank even further. Why do you ask? Nora said, leaning in curiously. The tips of her laku twitched. You're Mandalorian, don't you know this stuff already? Din pulled his thoughts away from the dark corner they were rounding and made himself shrug, nonchalant. We were scattered by the Empire, Din said. My tribe kept to itself. It was safer that way. Finding others after all this time has been... It's been different. Din settled on the safest word he could think of. Nora's expression softened. Yeah, she said, the tips of her laku twitching. I understand. Din nodded, relieved. She did understand. Twi'leks were just as scattered across the galaxy, though they'd never been hunted down like Mandalorians. The Hutts had been mining Ryloth for generations, stealing both resources and Ryloth's people. The Empire had done the same. Good different? Fennec asked, watching Din with cool, unreadable eyes. Or bad? Din thought about it for a moment, trying to wrestle his thoughts in order, to keep them away from the dark truth he could feel circling him like an animal ready to lunge, sharpening its claws. Mostly good, he admitted, settling on honesty. Fennec and Boba were alike enough that honesty was probably the best policy when dealing with Fennec. It's been... For a long time, we thought... I thought that we were the only ones left. that all Mandalorians lived like Din lived, halfway hiding, halfway dead. That all Mandalorian kids grew up underground, with one ear always listening for the raid sirens, with everything they owned packed up into kit so they could run at a moment's notice if they had to. But now Din knew that that wasn't true. There were others out there. Kree's inner people, Boba, more. Few and scattered and just as hunted as Din's covert had been, it seemed, but more. Other Mandalorians. And that was a good thing. But if we were in hiding before the rest of the Mandalorians, and we were hunted before the rest... Din shoved that thought away hard. He didn't have time to deal with it right now. Mostly good, he repeated firmly. Fennec studied him for a minute, probably seeing more of Din than he wanted her to see, even with his helmet on, but then she shrugged. I can imagine, she finally said. She must come from somewhere, too. Din didn't know anything about Fennec, beyond what almost everyone knew about her. She was skilled, she was ruthless, and she was very hard to kill. And she was loyal to Boba. She had his complete and entire trust, and he had hers. But where does she come from? Fennec's accent was Outer Rim, but the Outer Rim was enormous. She could have come from any one of a thousand worlds. Thank you, Din finally said, settling on words that were easy enough to say. Fennec arched an eyebrow at him. For telling me. It's... Not everyone who's met other Mandalorians wants to talk about them. He mostly meant Boba, and Fennec must have understood because she just shrugged a little and nodded. Don't mention it, she said. She scooped up a spoonful and tilted her head at Nora. Well? Nora blinked, but nodded and looked at Din. He waited. Geeta, Nora started, is convinced that she is still being followed. I know you've been looking out for her, Jaren. Kazeek and Zero have been too. Have you seen anything? Din shook his head, turning his attention to Geeta. Behind the bar, safe inside the palace, as safe as they could be anyway, with Gorga the Hutt apparently planning to crush them all, Geeta was bright and cheerful, flirting with patrons and laughing at some jest that the other bartender, a human man Din had never seen before, had cracked. I saw something that might have been Binox once, Din said. But when I went to check, there was no one in the sands. Other than that, no. So is it all in her head? Fennec asked. No one would blame her for being jumpy. She's been through a lot, her whole family has. She's lost almost all of her siblings to the Sarlanes, I'd heard. Din thought of how afraid Geeta had been, and of how hard she tried not to show him that she was afraid. She's genuinely scared of something, Din said slowly. That kind of fear. No, I don't think it's all in her head. I think she does have something to be afraid of. I don't know if whoever has been following her runs scared if he sees me or Kazeek. Most beings with sense would run scared from Kazeek. Or if she's not being followed every night, but something scared her. She's been followed at least once before. So what are you going to do? Fennec asked. Do we need to escalate this, she meant. Do we need to tell Boba? Din tilted his head, thinking. He didn't want to bother Boba with this, not while Boba was busy trying to get ready for a hot attack. I'll take her home tonight, he decided. It's been a few days since I've been able to. I'll see if anything or anyone turns up. If I don't see anything tonight, we can... adjust. Decide what to do in the morning. Fennec looked at Nora, who shrugged even though her face was pinched. Works for me, Manera, she said. I don't disagree. Geeta's had a rough go of things, but she's tough. I don't think she'd be this scared if she were just seeing shadows or sand spirits. Sand spirits? Din asked, curious. Fennec rolled her eyes. Don't get her started, she said. Nora thinks that the desert is haunted. It is haunted, Nora said, waving her half-eaten piece of hanshun like a blaster. Everyone knows that the Rushir live in forgotten graves and that the ghouls live in the passes. And the sand serpents and the Hara'ali. Din winced. Talking about the Hara'ali, the fire spirits that lived in the sands, according to the Tuskens, was bad luck. Din wasn't superstitious, really, but still. Mentioning the Hara'ali while in the desert was a bad idea. Usually, Din believed that the desert was only full of strange animals, danger, and mirages, nothing more. But even his belief in a normal galaxy had faltered a time or two alone in the dark. Nora reached the same idea because she stopped and cleared her throat. "Offworlders," she muttered in Rill. Din suppressed a smile. She wasn't wrong. "What time does Gita usually head home?" Din asked gently, drawing the conversation back to the matter at hand. "Shouldn't be long now," Fennec replied. "Taren, the new guy, wants to try his hand with the night crowd." "New guy?" Din echoed, turning back to take a closer look at the human beside Gita. The man, Taren, was young and scruffy, maybe 20, with blonde brown hair and a short patchy beard. He looked like a local, like he has sand behind his ears, Din thought. "Where's he come from?" Din asked. Fennec shrugged. "Some settler town north of here," she replied. "He came looking for credits," he said. "Do we trust him?" Fennec's eyes turned up at the corners. Din had asked the right question. "Not really," Fennec said, low enough that her words wouldn't carry to anyone nearby. "But he's got no ties to the huts that I could find, and we've seen plenty come by in the last few weeks looking for steady work. Nothing about him stands out."
"So we don't trust him, but we don't think that he'll try and kill us while our backs are turned," Din thought wryly.
He nodded. "Send her my way when she's done," Din said. "I'll take her home. I might stay a while in Mos Eisley, see if anyone turns up in the quarter who shouldn't be there."
"Not a bad idea," Fennec said. "Look for houses with black ash smeared underneath the doorframe. They'll let you in if you ask. They'll let you use the roof as a sniper's nest, too, if you need a good vantage point."
"Marked with black ash," Din repeated. He looked at Fennec sideways. "The network," he guessed. She inclined her head.
"You didn't hear it from me," she warned.
"Fair enough," Din muttered. He nodded at Fennec and Nora both, then pushed himself away from the table and stood before sliding away through the crowd. He took a quick look around the room to make sure that Bobo was fine. He was, seated at a table with three Tuscans and passing a sebsi pipe between them, sweet Kerat smoke curling in the air, and found a corner to lurk in. Din let the shadows at the edges of the room swallow him up. While he waited for Gita to finish her shift, Din focused all of his attention on the crowd. He didn't want to think too deeply about his conversation with Fennec or his conversation with Vanth. Both conversations had sharp edges, had things Din didn't want to think about, couldn't think about, not right now. There's too much going on. Philosophy, even Mandalorian philosophy, was a problem for later. Different creeds, different ways, the fact that Din was Darmanda, all of that was a problem for later. For after Vanth's network found Paz and the others, after this mess with Gorga the Hutt was put to rest. Philosophy was a matter for warriors who were safe in their coverts. Thinking about whys and what-ifs on the battlefield was a good way to get killed.
"I don't plan on getting anyone killed," Din thought, his gaze roving over the room.
The evening crowd was pretty tame. The music playing was gentle and easy, not the spine-rattling pulse of a nightclub, and hardly anyone was dancing. Most beings were just eating and drinking and doing business. A few sabacc games had popped up. A band of humans had brought a digeric table and were playing very intently. A few seedier types were obviously doing seedier business. Din saw a pair of Zeltrons exchanging credits with Zero, obviously hiring him out for some purpose or another, and a Battlescar Deveronian, a pit fighter if Din had ever seen one, was collecting bets, probably for some back-alley blood match later in the night. Despite all of that, the throne room felt familiar, safe despite its inhabitants. Din's allies were here. Everyone in this room would think twice before pulling a blaster on Din, because if they did, they'd be dead before they could get a shot off. Boba or Fennec or Kashyyyk would have Din's back. Din let himself relax a little, settling deeper into the shadows as the evening winnowed slowly into night and the crowd thinned out in fits and starts. Pairs slipping off towards the guest rooms, groups plodding up the stairs towards Mos Eisley or their camps in the Great Dune Sea. Finally, only the sabacc players and Boba's group of Tuscans were left, and Gita turned the bar over to Taren. She bent her head to talk to Fennec for a minute. Nora had slipped out a while ago, headed back to her family for the night, then searched the room until she spotted Din camped out in his corner. Din tipped his head. Gita scowled. Despite the scowl, Gita didn't argue much when Din peeled himself up off the wall and made his way over to her, and she didn't kick up a fuss as they climbed the stairs together and made for the front of the palace.
If anything, Gita swayed closer to Din, kept safe by a shadow. "Rough night?" Din asked her as they climbed. Something must have spooked Gita, because she'd never wanted to be this close to Din before. Gita didn't like men. Din couldn't blame her. Gita looked up at him. Her lakus seemed to shiver, a tremor running through them all the way to their tips. "No," she finally said. Din made a noncommittal noise. "Any more trouble on your way home?" This time she hesitated, lakku twitching. "Not on the way home," she said. Din stayed quiet, letting Gita take her time. "But at home, I don't know, maybe I'm crazy." They made it to the palace doors and stepped through them, out into the cool Tatooine night, and Gita wrapped her arms around herself like she was cold. "You have good instincts," Din said. Gita looked up at him. "You're probably not crazy. What's happening at home?" Gita chewed her lip for a minute, obviously thinking. Din let her take her time, though his instincts had come awake and his shoulders had pulled tight, tension building. Finally, Gita said, "My mother, she's seen someone outside of our house, twice now." "Someone?" Din said, fishing for more details. Gita shrugged. "That's all she said. Someone. I don't know. It could be nothing, but..." "But," Din muttered, understanding. Gita shrugged. She didn't add any other details, what the being her mother had seen had looked like, what she thought they were doing. But she didn't really need to. Her face was tight with anxiety. "I'll get you home," Din said gently, "and we'll see about keeping an eye on your house, okay?" Gita shrugged, her face schooled into a dancer's polite disinterest. Her lakku trembled, betraying her. "Okay," she said. Din's bark and Gita's speeder, a battered 614 AVA that had seen better seasons, were out in front with the rest of the guest bikes. "Stay close to me," Din said, climbing onto his bark. Gita nodded, face tight. The desert road was mostly clear. The moons had risen and the stars were bright. Mos Eisley was gleaming in the distance. Din and Gita weren't the only ones on the desert road anymore. They had company, most of it also aimed at Mos Eisley. Bova's business had picked up, which meant that the flow of beings between the palace and the city had picked up too. "That's not a bad thing," Din thought, skimming above the sands. Gita stayed close, angled a few meters ahead of him on his left side, almost close enough that the nose of Din's speeder brushed the seat of hers. Din switched over to thermal imaging to search the nearest dunes. The only red and orange flickers of life were small, womp rats and other scavengers. Din flicked over to infrared, too, searching for droid signatures. He didn't see any of those, either. His visor had its limits, of course. Without binocs, he could only see a few hundred yards in any direction. Din skimmed up a little, trying to get some more height to see farther across the dunes, to the bones of the ridges and the outskirts of the city. He switched back to normal vision. The dunes were silent and empty, too, except for a far-off herd of bantha to the right and a series of long, spindly ridges to the left. Din fiddled with his viewfinder for a second, zooming in. The bantha were minded by a few Tuscans. Din could see them, rendered minuscule by the distance, but none of them seemed at all interested in the speeders streaming from Boba's palace. Satisfied, Din swung around to scan the eastern ridges, just in time to catch something metal gleaming in the moonlight. For half a second, he thought that it was Beskar. He thought it so strongly that he turned his speeder, nose angled towards the ridges, and that was what saved his life. What he saw on the ridge wasn't Beskar. Something white and red flashed, a faint whistling filled the air, growing louder. "Not Beskar," Din thought, instinct taking over. "A grenade." He jerked his speeder, slamming its nose into the back of Gita's, and they both went skidding across the sands. Something, a concussion grenade if Din had to guess, whistled overhead. It hit the sands behind them, and it blew. Din went end over end. He felt the speeder slide away from him and tucked his head down on instinct. He hit the ground shoulder first and shouted, everything flaring gray. He might have bounced and rolled. Pain exploded in his right arm, in one of his knees. Heat boiled overhead. He came to a stop eventually, though, face down in the sand. Din coughed and rolled over. Smoke was everywhere. The others on the sand road had fled. Din saw speeders vanishing through the cloud of smoke and sand. He reached blindly for Gita and found someone. Fingers bumping against what felt like a ridge of bone, a shoulder, he hoped. Whoever Din touched stirred. They might have said something, but Din couldn't tell. His ears were whining and ringing. Static throbbed between them. "We're alive," Din told himself. He made himself climb up to his knees, then to his feet. Something in his knee screamed. Pain flashed red and black behind his eyes, but he pushed through it. Din had drawn his blaster on instinct, the muzzle aimed out towards the desert. His cloak was smoldering. He risked a glance at the speeders to see if either of them were still in working condition, and winced. Din's borrowed bark had taken the worst of the damage. The force of the blast had stripped off most of its plating, and the crash had crushed its nose, bowing the frame hard to one side. What was left of it sparked and smoked in the sands. Gita's speeder wasn't much better off. Half of its frame had been sheared away, and one of its power cells had been ruptured. Silver fluid leaked everywhere. "We need to move." Din and Gita needed cover, and they needed to get away from the speeders before anything blew. Din reached through the smoke again and found the shoulder. He tugged, and Gita came up through the smoke. Relief swept Din away for a moment. She was alive, too. Bruised, with a bloody cut across her forehead, eyes slightly unfocused, but alive. Din set her on her feet and shook her as hard as he dared. "Gita?" Din called. His voice sounded strange, distant. The ringing in his ears hadn't let up. "Someone from the palace will have seen the explosion," Din thought grimly. It was only a few miles between the palace and Mos Eisley, and the desert was dark. Any explosion would have lit up the sands like a sun. "Gita," Din repeated, "can you hear me?" She stared at him, uncomprehending. One of her pupils was larger than the other. The gash on her head was deep, bruising already blooming. "She has a concussion." Din switched to Rill, desperate. "Gita," he said, "can you hear me? We need to move. It's not safe here." That made something flicker in Gita's eyes.
"Safe?" she repeated, voice far off.
Good enough, Din thought. Adrenaline had flooded him, muting some of his pain. He looked around. There was still too much smoke and upthrown dust to see clearly, but that was good. That was cover. Din counted on it to hide him, at least for another handful of seconds, and hooked a hand under Gita's arm, tugging her off the road. There wasn't much cover out here. That was probably the point. Jabba had wanted to have a clear view of anyone coming in on the desert road. The ridges they'd been shot from were at least half a mile away, which meant that their attacker had heavy hardware. Professionals, Din thought, which was strange, but he didn't have time to think about it any harder. Din tugged Gita to the west, to the other side of the road, hoping that the smoke would hide them for another 5 or 6 seconds. "Get down," Din told her, still and Rill. "In the sand, pull it over you. Someone will have seen the explosion. We just need to hold on for a few minutes." "Down," Gita repeated, still fuzzy, but she shakily knelt and did as she was told. Din helped her lay flat in the sand and cover herself. In daylight, it wouldn't work. Gita's skin was too bright, too out of place. But in moonlight, everything was washed silver, sand and skin both. "There," Din thought, studying her for a moment. "That should work, at least for a..." Kark! Din dove, slamming into the road chest first, hard enough to rattle his teeth. Another grenade rocketed by, overshooting Din by several meters, and hit the sand. There was another shuddering impact, more sand and smoke thrown in the air. Din's auditory sensors shrieked. "Karking kark!" he snarled, cutting the auditory. The silence wasn't really silence. Din could still hear the world outside his helmet, muffled and dim, and his ears kept whining. But it was better than the crackle and shriek of damaged systems. Din looked up in time to see another grenade whistling past. This one had been aimed wild and missed by 30 meters. The resulting explosion didn't kick up anything but smoke and sand. "I'm short range right now," Din thought ruefully. He rolled over and came up in a crouch, ready to dive out of the way again if he had to. Din hadn't had time to replace his pulse rifle. He could have grabbed one from Boba's armory, but he hadn't needed one. Most of Din's fighting lately had been close quarters. He had the darksaber, had the spear, had his blaster, but that was about it. There was no need for a pulse rifle or a fire puncher in the throne room. "But this is the desert," Din thought grimly. "You can never be too prepared for the desert." He'd learned that lesson years ago. He hadn't thought that he'd need to learn it again. Din waited until there was another flash up on the distant ridge, just a flicker of light, and then he moved. Got to get away from Gita, he thought, darting across the road again. Din was visible. Beskar gleamed. I can play bait.
The idiot on the ridge seemed happy to throw concussion grenades. All Din had to do was survive them until the noise brought help.
The palace isn't far. It won't take too long.
And, Din thought, as the concussion grenade thudded into the sand and went off, shockwaves pushing at his back,
I'm good at playing bait.
He wasn't entirely defenseless, after all. He hadn't brought a rifle, but he had brought his jetpack. Din weighed the risks of swooping out over the ridge. Getting shot out of the air from any significant height would probably kill him, armor or not, and he didn't want to leave Gita. But the longer they waited, the more chances whoever was attacking them had to get lucky. A concussion grenade didn't need to hit dead on to do damage, after all.
This position isn't defensible. There was nowhere to take cover along the road.
So, Din thought, the best defense. If he stayed low, he should be fine. And an oncoming Mandalorian in full armor should make anybody think twice about what they were shooting at.
Gita will be fine, Din told himself.
It'd take him 15 or 20 seconds to reach the ridge. The shooter would only be able to take one more shot, maybe two. Din supposed that there could be more than one, but there was a dim roar overhead. Din looked up and realized that he didn't have to make a decision. Boba already had. Boba soared past, jetpack leaving a trail of black smoke across the stars. He was alone in the sky, but not on the ground. Three speeders roared off from the palace, skimming over the sands in Boba's wake. Whoever was shooting from the ridge must have seen Boba too, because the next grenade was aimed at the sky. It went up in a plume of white that Boba easily avoided, then arced down to detonate harmlessly in the sands. Within a handful of seconds, Boba had descended on the ridge, and there were no more grenades. A few streaks of red light, too far away for Din to hear, and then nothing. Din pushed out a breath.
It's over, he told himself, trying not to worry about Boba as anxiety spiked through him.
Boba was a ferocious fighter he could handle himself. And the speeders were roaring over the sands, aimed at the ridges. Boba would have backup. Din watched the ridges for another moment, waiting for the scream of a grenade or more blaster fire, but none came.
It's over.
Din turned and made his way back to Gita. The grenades had left a few craters in the road, smoke lingering in the thick air, but the speeders hadn't exploded yet, and Gita was still where Din had left her, shivering and mostly hidden in the sand.
Here, Din said, bending down to help her climb out again. It's all right, it's over now.
Gita let him pull her up and get her back on her feet, though she swayed dangerously. Din propped her up against the side. She was definitely concussed. One of her pupils was small, a prick of black, and the other was wide. But she could stand, which was a good sign, and she seemed to be able to at least understand Rill. Din wrapped an arm around her shoulder to help her stay upright and guided Gita in tiny lurching steps towards the palace. He knew they wouldn't have to walk the entire way back, which was good. His whole right side was starting to protest now that the immediacy of the fight was fading. He'd jarred his arm badly and his knee ached.
But it's not far.
Sure enough, they'd stumbled less than 100 yards back up the road when a pair of speeders came growling through the sands, carrying Kasik and Fennec. Fennec was in full gear, her rifle strapped to her back. Kasik's speeder had an unconscious human man slung over it. Din didn't recognize the man, but judged from the blaster burn in the man's shoulder that he was the one who'd been throwing grenades.
Jaren, said Fennec, cutting her speeder so Din could hear her over the noise of Kasik's engine. You okay?
Din nodded.
I'm fine, he said. Gita needs medbay. She's got a concussion.
You've got a concussion, Gita mumbled. Her words were thick and sleepy, but relief prickled through Din's chest. She could understand basic, too, then. That was a good sign. Fennec nodded. Kasik? I have room, Kasik warbled, cutting his own speeder. He dismounted, made a soothing noise at Gita, then hoisted her up and settled her into his speeder, ignoring her faint protests at being Wookiee-handled.
You can ride with me, Fennec said.
She wasn't asking, but Din wasn't about to argue either. His leg did hurt. He wordlessly climbed behind Fennec and held on as she kicked the speeder back into gear, shooting off towards the palace like a blaster bolt. They didn't talk until they'd made it back to the safety of the palace's shadow. Everyone was on edge.
A dozen guards stood in front of the palace's doors, armed to the teeth, and even more were patrolling in wide loops on speeders. Dean saw blasters glint and gleam on top of the palace's main roof. The blast-proof windows that could cover Boba's rooms when they needed to were down and firmly shut. Dean watched as Cassie came to a stop and helped Geeta down, scooping her up as if she weighed nothing at all. At his warbled command, Theron and another guard, this one a narrow Ithorian, took the unconscious man by an arm each and hauled him off into the palace. Cassie disappeared with Geeta, hopefully for whatever passed as the palace's medbay.
Do we even have a medbay?
Din was sure that there was one, but Boba had always been the one to patch Din up. Fennec came to a stop, too, killing her speeder, and craned back to look at Din. "So," she said. Her tone was flat. She was unhappy. "What happened?" Din grimaced. He wasn't particularly happy either. "We," he said slowly, thinking back to their conversation over Hanshun and Stu. "Probably need to escalate." Fennec's mood did not improve as she and Din moved through the palace, Din filling her in on what had happened. "Do you think Geeta was the target?" Fennec asked once Din was done. Din shrugged. "It doesn't seem likely," he said. "I don't know what she could have done to someone to justify getting thrown off the road with a concussion grenade. If it was slavers looking for her, grenades seem like an odd weapon choice." "Do you think you were the target?" Din paused. "If he was the target, not Geeta, then grenades made sense. Beskar would hold up to a grenade, but underneath the Beskar was Din. Flesh and bone and fragile organs. Beskar would keep the heat of a grenade away, would diffuse some of the force. But as Din had learned fighting the Dark Troopers, even Beskar had its limits. A concussion grenade going off close enough, yes, it could kill Din, or anyone in armor." "I don't know," he admitted. "I'm not out with Geeta every night. I don't know how they could have known I'd be out there." "True," Fennec allowed, shaking her head. She looked at Din, eyes gleaming. "There were three of them on the ridge. Boba killed the one with the rocket launcher. The second decided he'd rather jump than stand and fight. He died hitting the sands. And the third one..." Din nodded. "This palace had its dungeons, and Boba had made beings talk before." "Did they have anything with them that would help figure out who they're working for, what they want?" Fennec shook her head. "No tats, no codes, no pucks, nothing." That struck Din as unusual, too. Who went around shooting at a man in Beskar armor with nothing? Din would have expected at least a puck or a datapad with logs tracking movement in and out of the palace. "How's everyone else?" Din asked. "Everyone who went to help." "We're all fine," Fennec said. "Bob was pissed. We could hear the first grenade go off from here. You need the medbay?" Din shook his head. "No," he said ruefully. I think I should probably go talk to Boba." "He'll be glad to see you're all right," Fennec said neutrally. "I'm going to go find Nura. She heard the grenades from Mos Eisley, too. She's beside herself. She's convinced she got you and Geeta both killed." "It's not her fault," Din said. Nura had asked him to look out for Geeta, to not tell Boba, but it wasn't Nura who'd been up on that ridge shooting at him. "I'll tell her," said Fennec, dryly. "Try not to get into any trouble. Boba's going to be out for a while, said he was going to fly a patrol out over a 10-click, make sure there isn't anyone else out there with a B-1 and a grudge." "Call me if you need anything," Din said. He might have time to take a look at his bad arm himself, then get some Bacta on it before Boba got back and expected Din to explain himself. Din resisted the urge to wince. Boba, he thought, will not be happy. But Boba had only ever asked for honesty at night. He'd given Din the discretion to handle himself during the day as he needed to. None of us expected Geeta to be attacked directly. Troubled, Din began the stiff, limping walk towards his own rooms. He couldn't make sense of it. Why attack now, of all nights? Din made it to his rooms and pulled off his gauntlet, hissing at the livid color of his wrist when he got his kuta rolled up. His wrist was swollen and red, faint blue bruising already showing at the places where his skin was thinnest. "If my carking arm is broken again..." Din rooted around in his kit and pulled out a strip of Bacta, shaking it a little to activate it, before wrapping it around the swollen, achy joint. His knee hurt too, so Din gave it the same treatment, removing enough armor to get at the sore joint and slapping Bacta over it. Boba didn't skimp on medical supplies. All of Din's Bacta now was high-grade stuff, and the cooling, pain-numbing effect broke out across his skin immediately. He sighed in relief and tugged his armor back on. Boba might have an idea of why we were attacked, Din thought. He didn't particularly want to face Boba if Boba was angry, but... I don't want him to take this out on Nora or Fennec, either. Fennec could take care of herself, Din knew, but Nora... Boba already likes hitting me, Din thought, rolling his shoulders. If he's really, truly angry, well... Boba had said that some beings came to him for punishment. Din made his way back to the lift and up to Boba's rooms, tugging his helmet off. Boba's rooms were still closed when the lift opened on them. The blast doors were shut, cloaking the room in artificial darkness. He's not back, then, Din thought. He walked over to the work table, bolstered by the Bacta patch on his knee, and set his helmet down among all of Boba's data pads and maps, his plans and notes and information. Then Din sat down at his usual stool and went about the process of taking his armor off bit by bit, leaving it all in a tidy pile. He left his flight suit on for now, but started the process of working out some of the sand that had found its way into its seams. Din didn't have to wait long. 10 clicks by jetpack was nothing. Din heard Boba approach first, a dull roar past the heavy blast shields. Then the blast shields began to creak and groan, ratcheting slowly back up into the ceiling. Boba came into the room in a tongue of fire, smoke curling from the edges of his jetpack. He landed hard on the opposite end of the room, then turned to look at Din. The edges of his helmet gleamed in the sudden reintroduction of moonlight. Din looked back, mouth set. "You're all right, then," Boba said, into the tense silence between them. His voice was evened out by his helmet. Din nodded. "I'm fine," he said. "Geeta will be, too. She got knocked around, but Kasik took her down to the infirmary. We'll both be fine in a day or two." "How badly are you hurt?" Boba asked. The vocoder made his voice oddly flat. Apprehension curled in Din's belly. "Not badly," Din said. "A sore knee, a banged wrist." Boba looked at Din for a few more seconds, the tension between them almost unbearable. Din regretted taking off his jetpack because he felt suddenly and distinctly like he needed to make a quick escape, and then tugged his helmet off in a swift, violent motion and tossed it across the room. The helmet hit the floor in a shower of sparks and clattered. Din startled. He risked looking Boba in the eye and paled. Boba's expression was terrible, with the black of the sky in a sandstorm, his eyes flashing with barely suppressed anger. "Kark," Din thought, for the third time that evening. "We miscalculated." "Boba," Din said, trying to soften the terrible expression on Boba's face. "I'm fine, really. I just got knocked around a little." Boba pulled back. "You were hurt," he said lowly. "Knocked over," Din replied. "I've had worse." Being thrown out of a crashing speeder wasn't ever fun, but Din had been through worse, much worse. He'd only fallen a meter or so this time, and that onto sand. He'd be trying to get sand out of the seams of his flight suit for a few days, and he'd probably be sore for a few days more, but it could have been worse. "He knows that too," Din thought, searching Boba's face. Maybe that was why Boba was so upset. He knew that it could have been worse. A grenade could have hit Din, killed him inside his armor. One could have hit Geeta and turned her into bloody dust. They could have been ambushed at close quarters, butchered, or dragged off out into the Sorrow Lanes before Boba could have made it out of the palace to help them. "That's why he's so angry," Din thought. "We could have been hurt or killed or worse before he could have done anything to help us. He would have been helpless to stop it. It would have been out of his control." Boba's eyes cut into him. "I didn't even know you were in danger," he said. His tone was dark. "I thought, well..." He cut himself off, obviously trying to rein in his terrible temper before he could say something that would start an argument or worse. Din understood. Of course he understood. He'd sat here in Boba's rooms a night ago, tearing himself to pieces because Din had been here, safe, while Paz and the others were in danger somewhere on Tatooine. was still in danger, really. Would be in danger until Din could find him and get them somewhere safe.
I have to live with that, Din thought.
He knew that running off after Paz without any information, without knowing where to find him or what to expect, put Paz and his charges in danger, just like it was ridiculous for Boba to expect to know where his allies were and what dangers pressed in around them all of the time. But knowing that and accepting it were different things, and Din understood that too. It still stuck in his throat, waiting for Vanth's network to find Paz for him. He wanted to be out there looking himself. Din took a breath. It wasn't supposed to be dangerous, Din hedged. It wasn't supposed to be like this.
What the kark was it supposed to be like, then?
Boba snarled.
Din winced.
There's the temper, he thought. He couldn't blame Boba for it, not really. Din would be angry, too, if he'd found out that one of his friends had put themselves in harm's way without telling Din about it. He swallowed back the urge to apologize, to do something drastic, to wrench Boba's attention away from whatever black thoughts were jumping in the corner of his jaw just behind Boba's tongue.
It was supposed to be a simple escort, Din said honestly.
Geeta, a few weeks ago, Fennec and Nora approached me, told me that Geeta was afraid to go home by herself.
Why?
Geeta thought that she was being followed, Din said. Fennec and I thought it was a slaver, maybe, or an old lover, or someone who'd known Geeta when she danced for Jabba. Nora was worried about her and wanted someone with her, that's all. You found Geeta in a bad place, didn't you, after her mother came to you for help? Boba gritted his teeth. A muscle in his jaw worked.
Why, he growled, am I just finding out about this? This all started a few weeks ago?
Din met his eyes. Geeta asked Nora not to tell you, he said. Better to get the truth out all at once. And Nora asked the same of me and Fennec. They came to me because they'd already had a few of the others look without finding anything. And Geeta probably didn't want to tell you, Din added, seeing the look in Boba's eye and heading him off before he could ask, because she was around during Jabba's day, when asking for help when Jabba was in the wrong mood was dangerous. Boba's expression darkened even further.
I am not, he bit out, every word a growl. Jabba the Karking Hutt.
Din spread his hands. I know that, he said. You know that. Fennec and Nora, too. But Geeta, she's young, scared. And she's got reason to be.
Not of you, Din added, catching the way Boba pulled back.
But someone has been following her. We learned that tonight for sure.
We'll find out why, too, Boba growled.
Din thought of the human man probably starting to stir in the worm's old dungeons and winced. That man's days were numbered. He'd be lucky to see another two sunrises, and by the end he'd probably wish that he'd followed his friend over the ridge into the desert. But he tried to kill Geeta. Din was a warrior. He was used to other beings trying to kill him. The way of the Mandalore was the way of the hunter and the prey. Din had opened himself up to enemy attacks when he'd sworn the creed, when he'd put on the armor. But Geeta's just a kid. What did anyone want to kill a freed dancer for? Jabba's day was done. There was no reason to try and kill her. Even if Din had been the target, Geeta had been in the way. Would have died the same as Din, but for no reason at all, and that rankled. They weren't dealing with another honorable warrior. Din and Geeta had been attacked by Hutune, by cowards. Din curled his hands into loose fists. His weak arm throbbed in protest, but he ignored it. We will find out, Din agreed. And when we do, he shook his head. Din would be first in line to join that warband. Boba's jaw was still working. He was quiet for a minute, clearly trying to wrestle down the worst of his anger, trying to aim it at the right person. Din didn't think that Boba was angry with him, not really. Boba was angry that Din and Geeta had been hurt. He was angry at the beings who'd hurt them. But I'm here, Din thought, a little wry, and I'm telling him something he didn't want to hear.
I could have helped, Boba finally said. He had managed to back some of his anger away with visible effort, but his expression was still bleak, brows drawn in, mouth pressed into a thin line. I could have sent her home with a guard, had eyes in the ridges watching the road. She had a guard going home, Din pointed out. I've taken her a few times, Kasik has too, Zero, Theron. She's been watched, protected. Tonight we just got unlucky. You've all known about this for weeks, but didn't think I needed to know, Boba said flatly. Yes, Din said. Boba hadn't needed to know. Until tonight, there hadn't been any real danger. No, Din thought, remembering Geeta's fear. There's always been danger, but none of us realized that it was something that we could touch, that could touch us, until tonight. That was a miscalculation on Din and Fennec and Nora's parts. Even though they'd agreed to help Geeta, they hadn't thought that the danger she faced was serious. We won't make that mistake again. Boba snorted. Din grimaced. Geeta made Nora promise, he said. She gave Geeta her word. Nora told me and Fennec because she couldn't ask you for help directly, not without breaking her promise to Geeta. We were the next best option. Fennec and I told Nora we'd keep Geeta silence unless we needed to break it. We didn't need to, not until tonight. You both could have died, Boba growled. We could have, Din admitted. The fall hadn't been that bad. Had been worse for Geeta, since she hadn't been wearing armor to take the brunt of falling. But if their shooter had aimed a little higher, Din and Geeta could have been killed. But I'm used to that, Din said. I could be killed anywhere. Beskar offered excellent protection, but there were gaps in Din's armor. One shooter with a modded blaster and a good aim could get Din through the neck or the side, through the spaces between plates of Beskar, through the tough material of Din's kuta. Up until today, I hadn't seen any proof, any hard proof, that Geeta was being followed at all, Din added. I saw Binox in the desert once, but that could have been anyone. Smugglers, Tuskens, moisture farmers coming back from a sizeless market. Have any of the others seen anything? Din shook his head. None of us, he said. At worst, I thought Geeta was being followed by some slavers who'd known her from her dancing days, the ones you sent Kasik to rescue her from. This was something else. This was Gorga the Hutt, I think, said Boba darkly. Din blinked, startled. Gorga? Why? What does Geeta have to do with Gorga? Nothing, Boba said. He looked at Din. I think they were shooting at you. A chill broke out down the back of Din's neck, like someone had put him in the crosshairs. You think that whoever's been following Geeta, what, wanted her to ask for help? To give Gorga's Nexupaws a few chances at taking out some of my hunters and guards, yeah, Boba finished. Din hissed. It made sense now that he'd thought about it. Geeta was young and she'd been through a lot. She was easy to intimidate. Of course she'd gotten frightened and asked Nora for help. And while Nora hadn't told Boba directly, she'd told Fennec, who had control over all of the guards and hunters who worked in the palace. Get us out in the open, Din thought, working through it. Pick us off. It was really only a strategy that would have worked once or twice. Boba would have noticed if his guards had started disappearing into the sands. Din remembered Geeta's new fear. They weren't supposed to shoot at me, Din realized. Not tonight. They were... Geeta told me that her mother's been seeing strangers around the family house at night. I think that I was supposed to stick around in Mos Eisley for a while, where it'd be easy, well, easier, to grab me. I don't think I'm the target, or the primary target at least. They're just aiming for anyone who works as a guard or hunter. You think they shot at you because they realized that it was you, not one of the others, Boba said. Din nodded. I haven't been able to take Geeta home for a few nights. I think they were probably setting up to grab Zero or Theron, maybe Kasik, though most beings aren't stupid enough to try and hold a Wookiee. Din wasn't sure what Gorga the Hutt's game was beyond that. Did he want to grab a guard or a hunter and threaten them, try to get them to roll over on Boba?
I don't know Theron or Zero. Would they break under torture? Most beings would break under torture eventually. Din knew that he would rather die and that he had a pretty impressive pain tolerance, but even then... Din had never been trained to resist torture. Everyone in the covert knew what happened when a warrior was captured by an enemy. Captured warriors were stripped of their armor. Disgraced. Din had been given a capsule of powdered rockwort venom the first time he'd been allowed to roam outside of the covert. It lived in a small compartment in the inner cheek of his helmet and could be released with a command from his gauntlet. If Din was ever captured, he was supposed to release that compartment and swallow the capsule. It didn't matter now, of course, he was already Darmanda. But it meant that he'd never been taught to resist torture. Theron has a high pain tolerance, too, Din thought. But Zero... No, Din said slowly, looking at Boba. The Hutune on the ridge. If Theron or Zero had gone out with Geeta tonight, I don't think they would have attacked. They would have watched, waited, maybe tried to grab them in Mos Eisley. But they saw me and decided to try to take me out. Gorga the Hutt thinks I'm dangerous. Gorga the Hutt was right. Din was dangerous. And he was angry, too. Angry that Geeta had been caught in the crossfire. Angry that Gorga thought that he could take Din out so easily. Boba made a low, rough sound, so deep it was nearly a snarl. He miscalculated, Din pointed out. His men underestimated me, and now they're dead or caught. And you're going to break the one who survived. I am, Boba said darkly. I'm going to make that Shabuir wish he'd never set foot on my planet, take an aim at my people. And once he's told me everything he knows about Gorga's plans, we'll take the fight to Gorga, Din said. He nodded, satisfied with the bare bones of that plan. He nodded again and took a step back. Fennec would need to be told. She'd probably put a fair few of the pieces together herself, but she could start rounding up a proper warband, and Din could. Boba reached out and caught Din by his good arm. His touch wasn't rough, grip loose, but Din still pulled up in surprise. "Where are you going?" Boba asked. The words came out sharp and Boba winced, made an effort to even out his expression. "To tell Fennec," Din said. "She'll want to know, to get ready." Boba didn't pull his hand away. "At least let me look at your arm first," Boba said gruffly. "That's the one the Dark Trooper broke, isn't it?" That made Din smile a little, lightening. The worst of Boba's anger had passed. "Are you the whole palace's personal medic?" he asked. "Or just mine?" Boba huffed. "Humor me," he said. Humoring Boba would probably soothe the rest of the anger out of Boba's face, so Din gave in and let Boba reel him closer. Din held up his bad wrist for inspection. "I didn't break it, I don't think," Din said, "and I've already got back to on." Boba made a rough, disgruntled sound, inspecting the edges of the back to patch. "Where did you get your pins put in?" he asked. "At the wrist?" Din shook his head. "A little higher," he said. "The droid on the light cruiser told me it'd be too risky to put pins in the wrist itself. It'd compromise some mobility." Boba's fingers found the edge of the sleeve of Din's kuta. He looked at Din. "May I?" he asked softly. Din nodded. Boba pushed Din's sleeve up, his fingers gentle as they probed the tendons in Din's forearm. Din hissed. It hurt. But he let Boba go about it. Boba wasn't trying to hurt him. He was just checking to see how deep the damage went. "I think it's just a sprain," Boba said. "I can't see with the patch on, but you've only got swelling, no breaks that I can feel." "See?" Din said, making no move to pull his arm back from Boba's grasp. "Fine. I told you I've had worse." They were very close together, like this. Almost nose to nose. Boba still had his gloves on, the texture rough against Din's skin. He tried not to shiver, but of course Boba caught it anyway. This time Boba's eyes darkened with something other than anger. "Din," Boba said quietly. "We don't... This might not be the best time." That sounded like something Boba would say if he thought Din was too fragile. Din set his chin. "The best time for what?" he challenged. Boba studied him for a second. His grip on Din's wrist tightened, not to the point of pain, but to the point of pressure. He could hurt Din like this, if Bova wanted to, if he was still angry enough. Din's pulse jumped in his throat. Desire, wild desire, kicked him in the chest like a shockwave. Bova caught that too, and Din saw his pupils dilate. I want to kiss you, Bova admitted, roughly. Din's eyes widened. But I'm not sure it'd be welcome.
Not welcome? Din asked, frowning. Why?
Bova gestured between them with a jerky hand. We just finished arguing, he said. And you've been hurt, and I'm angry, and you could have died. Din swallowed.
I've heard, he said carefully, that almost dying put some people in the mood.
Bova stared at him for a second, thunderstruck, and then he laughed. Not a proper laugh, one of the deep, chuckling ones Din was coming to cherish every time he heard them, but still. A victory was a victory, however small.
Where'd you hear that, Jerrica? Where'd you hear that, Jerrica? Bova asked.
Din shrugged.
Around, he hedged.
Around, Bova repeated. Unbelievable.
What, Din said. It's not true.
His body was certainly coming around to the idea. All of that adrenaline, the thump of his heart, the focus that came with being under fire, that had had nowhere to go, Din hadn't been able to hunt down the shooter. Bobo was close, so close Din could smell him, sweat and metal and cedar wood. Din's body could certainly be persuaded to be in the mood.
It's true, Bobo admitted, voice deepening to a rumble.
He reeled Din in a little closer, close enough that he could lean up and press a kiss to the corner of Din's jaw, which he did. Din melted into it. Boba's lips felt strange against the smooth skin. Din had never been touched there without a beard between himself and another person, not that that was saying much. Boba was the only person Din had ever kissed.
What are you in the mood for, Jerrica? Boba murmured.
Din's heart beat faster. The nickname marked a transition. Bova was willing to play along, to set his anger aside. Heat flickered in Din's belly.
You had some ideas earlier, Din murmured back. His stomach jolted to think of them.
In the bath, I mean. Bova rumbled, pressing his lips to Din's, taking effortless control of the kiss. Din opened his mouth for Bova, letting him in. He was starting to get the hang of this, of the pressure, the strange feeling of someone's tongue brushing against his own. He was starting to learn what Bova liked, too, because Din wasn't surprised when Boba's kiss turned sharp, teeth nipping at Din's lip hard enough to bruise. Din opened up to that, too, leaning in. The pain was bright and sweet. Bova still had Din's wrist held tight in his hand.
I think, Bova said, voice gone rough with kissing, that I might have a better idea.
You usually do, Din admitted, a little dazed.
Bova chuckled and tugged Din, pulling him towards the bed.
Bova pointed.
Sit, he instructed.
Din sat.
Something in Boba's tone, the lingering anger there, though most of it had faded with the kiss, told Din that tonight was not a night to argue.
Bova stood over him for a moment, surveying, eyes black, then nodded to himself and pushed his way between Din's legs with such casual ownership that Din's breath caught.
Why did you take your armor off? Bova asked, looming above Din.
There wasn't that much difference in height between them, not even like this, Din sitting and Bova not. But something about the way Bova stood made him seem enormous, implacable.
Din shivered.
I had sand in it, Din said honestly. He knew that they'd shifted into some new nebulous territory. Not quite their agreement, but not business either. This was something new, and Din wasn't sure he knew all of the rules.
Better to stick with what I know, he decided.
Bova huffed.
Sand, he said.
It gets everywhere, said Din.
Bova snorted, amusement pulled out of him, and then leaned forward and casually pulled open Din's flight suit with one hand. The various buttons and buckles popped, Din startled, surprised. A jolt of blind heat went through him, raised by the easy strength in Boba's grip. But didn't fight, as Boba worked efficiently, undoing the rest of the fastenings holding the flight suit together.
Din let Boba undress him, dazed and trying to gather his thoughts. The almost careless dominance. The expectation that Din would let Boba do this, strip him bare like this, left Din's head spinning. But I'm not fighting it, Din realized. He was tense, but not afraid. He moved his arms to help Boba peel the suit off over his head, lifted his legs when prompted. Boba didn't leave Din the protection of his underclothes either. Within a few more seconds, Din was naked on the bed, shivering a little with both anticipation and the chill. Boba's eyes roamed over him. His fingers, oddly gentle, brushed the edge of the bacta patch on Din's knee. "Orijate," said Boba, his voice just as gentle as his fingers, and leaned down, tipping Din's chin back to bring Din in for another kiss. This was a kiss like the one in the water, hungry and devouring. Din opened to it, let Boba take what he wanted. Boba rumbled against him, a deep, groaning sound, and tilted forward. Under Boba's guidance, Din crawled backwards, deeper into the bed. His heart picked up, irregular, but he tried to ignore the apprehension. Boba followed, crawling up to cover Din's body with his own, pressing Din back against the mattress and kissing Din until he was breathless. Boba finally pulled away, nosing the bottom of Din's right ear. "Same rules as a normal session," Boba said roughly. "It gets to be too much. You need to stop for any reason. Just say Gev and we stop, okay?" "Okay," Din said, once he was sure he was able to say the word without stammering. His heart was beating so fast that he thought it might catch fire. "Good," said Boba, and pressed a deep, bruising kiss to the side of Din's neck. This kiss had teeth, too, and Din tilted his head to give Boba better access, sensations flickering across his skin. Metal dug into his chest, and he shivered at the contrast.
You're not going to take those off?" Din panted, meaning the robes.
Boba hadn't even stripped all the way out of his armor. The edge of his breastplate dug into Din's chest. The metal of one of his gauntlets was cold as it brushed the inside of Din's thigh. Din turned his head and let Boba worry the soft skin behind his ear. Boba's breath made Din flush hot and cold all over, his body trying to decide what it felt.
"Why should I?" Boba rumbled.
Even his voice scattered chill bumps down the side of Din's neck.
"All I need is this, isn't it?"
Boba rolled his hips in one smooth motion, fabric dragging across Din's thighs, against his cock where it was trapped against the stomach. Din moaned, shocked. The sensation, rough fabric, Boba's own cock hard and hot through the layers between them, sent a dozen mixed signals sparking up through Din's belly, his spine. Faint pain, close pleasure, hot skin, cold Beskar. Boba rolled his hips again. Din clutched at Boba's arm desperately, not sure if he wanted to shove Boba away or drag him closer. "Yeah," said Boba, mostly to himself. "This will do nicely." Din swallowed. "The other idea you had," he started, wary, and Boba gave him a smile that was all teeth.
"I'm going to fuck you, Jerrica," Boba said.
Din sucked in a breath. His whole body thrummed in anticipation, something rising in Din's chest like Beskar struck by an anvil. "Do you want that?" Din licked his lips, mouth suddenly dry.
"Yes," he said hoarsely. "Yes, I do."
Boba made a pleased, low noise.
"Good," he said.
He pressed their hips together again. Din could feel the shape of Boba's cock through the fabric between them, the heat of it, the weight. His own twitched, blood and heat rushing to pool in his belly.
"Stay here, then, Jerrica," Boba said. His voice softened. "Hold your legs open for me. Let me see you."
Din flushed all the way down to his chest, mortified. He'd never... The thought of doing that was obscene, was... But this is obscene, Din thought. That was the point, wasn't it? His brain was confused, caught between Boba's casual dominance, his strength, and his gentleness. Biting his lip, Din slowly, cautiously did as Boba asked. He hooked his hands underneath his knees and lifted a little, as much as he could, without feeling like he would burst into mortified flames. The position was vulnerable, just as vulnerable as Din had been with a razor pressed to his face, Boba looking at him like they both weren't sure if Din wanted to be cut or not. Breeze drifted across Din's body, stirring his already sensitive skin. He could feel Boba's eyes on him, on the most vulnerable, intimate parts of him, like blaster bolts.
"Good," Boba said, still soft.
He climbed off the bed to rummage around beneath it, then returned with a small bottle of something. Din could see a label, but nothing else, in his hands. Din's hands shook, but he held the position. Boba was staring at him with open, raw desire.
"Very good," Boba praised, pressing back in like a desert wind, warm and everywhere all at once.
His body covered Din's, and Din let go, letting his legs drop back to the bed. His face was still red with embarrassment, but Boba rewarded his obedience with long, lingering kisses, to Din's mouth and his jaw and the side of his neck, trailing bites and bruises all the way down to Din's chest. Din's erection, which had flagged a little when embarrassment had swept over him, returned in full force. He could feel Boba pressed against him, too. His cold Beskar plates were warming up, heated by Din's body.
"How long has it been since someone's fucked you?" Boba asked, hunger plain in his voice.
"Years," said Din, honestly. It had been years.
Boba made a pleased little noise.
"You ever play with yourself?" he asked, fingertips brushing against Din's balls, the thin skin behind them, then Din's whole body twitched.
"No," Din said, ragged with shame. He didn't. He was gonna die before Boba got anywhere if Boba kept talking like this.
Din's heart hammered in his throat.
"No, you know I haven't. I don't."
"You don't do this," Boba agreed, pressing his mouth to the corner of Din's jaw again.
"Relax, Jerka. Relax. You're all right. You're doing well. You're being good."
The praise washed over Din, lessening some of the hammering fear. It wasn't that Din thought that Boba was going to laugh at him or mock him or pull Din down onto his cock without any preparation just to see Din cry. Boba was, well, he was cruel when he wanted to be. He'd written agony onto the backs of Din's eyelids and had held Din's life in his hands more than once. But he wasn't vicious. He didn't do these things to watch Din bleed or suffer. Boba did them because he liked them. Because Din liked them.
"Udesi," Boba murmured, and the roll of Mandoa was comforting.
"What are you thinking, Jerika?" Din took a steadying breath. Boba hadn't pulled his hand away, his fingertips resting against the rim of Din's asshole. Din knew what the bottle Boba had gotten from underneath the bed was for now.
"I'm thinking," Din said, voice uneven with both fear and desire, that I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm hard, but I want it. And I'm thinking that I don't know what that says about me."
"That says," Boba began, in between small, fluttering kisses down the other side of Din's throat,
"that you're very brave, Jerika, and that I'm honored by your trust."
Din swallowed. His eyes stung, and he didn't know why.
"By my..." he started, but he didn't get any further than that.
Boba pulled his hand away and unscrewed the little bottle in his other hand. A familiar scent hit the air. This was what Boba had used just the night before. The oil that had made every glide of his cock against Din's feel smooth and easy, almost textureless. Boba let Din watch as he poured a small measure over one hand. He smiled.
"Udesi," Boba repeated, like he was gentling a wild animal, and then he wrapped a hand around Din's cock.
Din choked back a moan, feet kicking a little. Boba let him shift and squirm, jacking his cock a few times until Din was panting again, breathless, sweat pooling in the hollow of his throat. And then Boba let go, watching appreciatively as Din's cock bobbed back towards his belly, wet and red, and ran a wet thumb over the sensitive skin of Din's hole. Din did twist this time, jerking hard on instinct. Boba caught him easily.
"That's enough," he said firmly.
The authority in his voice was enough to calm Din down. Boba's thumb pressed against him insistently.
Din took a deep breath and tried to relax, to loosen the tension in his stomach and his back.
"You need to relax, Sherry," Boba murmured. "I don't want to hurt you."
"I'm trying," Din said, teeth gritted. He wanted this. He wanted this. But his body wasn't quite as sure. Din hadn't ever done this. Hadn't ever laid back and taken it. He'd always done this quickly, hurried, trying to get it over with before an elder caught him at it. He'd never done this with someone who could see him, see all of him. And Din was terrified that Boba would see too deeply, would see all the way down to the parts of Din that were weakened and rusted through, and... Boba made a thoughtful sound, pulling Din out of his thoughts.
"Would it help?" he said, seeing more than Din wanted him to. He seemed to always see more than Din wanted him to. "If I made you take it."
A high, thin sound slipped out from between Din's teeth before he could catch it. Boba's eyes went black with desire.
"All right," he said hoarsely. "All right, I can. Yes, I can do that."
Din's heart kicked up, entirely outside of Din's control. His breath caught. He wanted.
"Jerrica," Boba said, dark and sweet.
He set his free hand on Din's hip, shifted his weight so that he wasn't pinning Din down exactly, but could with another half inch of movement.
"Is that what you needed to hear?"
He traced the fragile skin behind Din's balls with a finger, making Din squirm. The lubricant left Din cold and open, vulnerable.
"That you can fight all you like," Boba continued.
He set the tip of a finger against Din's hole. Din twitched. He couldn't help but twitch, flanks shuddering. He wanted to wrench away. He wanted to press closer. He wanted Boba to get it over with. Boba, of course, had his own ideas. He bore in with patient, unfathomable slowness. Din's body fought him, tension coiled so tightly in Din's stomach that he thought he might snap in half. But Boba didn't let up. It did hurt a little. It had to hurt with how tense Din was. But Boba went achingly slow, fingers so wet that oil dripped down onto the bed, dripped down the skin of Din's ass to pool underneath him, and then Din couldn't bear the tension anymore, and took a deep, shuddering breath, and...
"Orijate," Boba murmured.
The praise rushed warm through Din's belly. Boba had gotten a finger inside Din to the second knuckle, and Din hadn't split in half or snapped from the fear of it. Din let out a breath and shifted a little on the sheets.
"Better?" Boba asked. "Do you need me to stop?"
Din thought about it, Gev hovering on the tip of his tongue, but shook his head. It was different, an alien feeling, knowing that Boba was inside Din, even if it was just a finger. But it wasn't bad, and the praise had certainly helped.
"Okay," Din thought. "One finger. I can take more."
"No," Din said clearly. "Don't stop. I can. I want." Boba hummed.
"All right, then," he said. "You can squirm all you need to, then. You'll take more."
Din nodded. Boba started by moving his index finger slowly, getting Din's hole wet, getting Din used to the strange sensation. Then, when Din was tossing his head a little, restless, heat climbing in his skin and something pooling in his belly, Boba withdrew his finger and came back with two. Din's body didn't fight as hard this time. Boba had coated his fingers with enough oil that it was almost easy to take a second finger. It didn't hurt at all. There was pressure, insistent and present, but no pain. Boba rumbled a wordless noise of approval, shifting his fingers, using them to spread Din's hole open enough that he could fit a third finger inside. That almost hurt. A full feeling rooted itself at the base of Din's spine, but it was a good hurt. It felt like stretching a sore muscle after a good fight, or like earning a bruise. It felt like something Din would be able to feel and remember for days. Din moaned. Boba chuckled, moving his hand a few more times. The tips of his fingers brushed against
Something, a bundle of nerves that made Din moan higher, pleasure swarming in his stomach. Good boy, Boba said warmly. I knew you could do it. Now move with me. He took his fingers out of Din. Din tried not to moan at the loss, skin too hot, too cold, and rolled them, gently, so that it was Boba who was on his back. Din draped bonelessly in his lap, dazed. Din made an unhappy sound, shifting. He wanted Boba's fingers back, wanted that bundle of nerves inside him to light up again. And Boba chuckled. Be patient, little Jaren, he said. I'm almost ready.
Almost ready for... Oh, Din thought, as Boba poured more oil into his hand.
Why don't you make yourself useful? Boba invited, tone sly. Take me out. I won't bite.
Take...
But Din understood that too, even as he flushed all the way down to his belly. He obeyed, turning the corner of Boba's robe up. Boba's pants were rucked low around his hips, shifted and bunched by their rolling around. Din bit his lip. Boba didn't rush Din any further, for which Din was grateful. He reached down, set his hands at the waistband of Boba's pants, and carefully tugged them down. Boba's cock sprang free, hard and beaded with fluid. Seeing it, the proof that Boba wanted this as much as Din did, sent relief crashing through Din's chest. His fingers shook. Boba took Din's left hand first, set it on his shoulder, then did the same for the right. With an easy roll of his hips, Boba slid Din so that their hips were flushed together, Din cradled in the safe heat of Boba's lap. Boba still had his armor on. That kept catching the edge of Din's thoughts, that Boba still had his armor on, his clothes, that he was going to fuck Din like this. Boba saw him think that and grinned wickedly. He used his wet hand to spread oil over his cock. Din's mouth was dry. Boba had big hands, had thick fingers, but compared to his cock, it's not going to fit, Din thought distantly. Boba settled his hands on Din's hips and guided him up, positioned Din over his cock. Keep your hands on my shoulders, Jerrica, Boba said. His voice was still gentle, despite the ragged edge to it, despite the desire that was eating Boba alive just as it was eating Din. Din swallowed. He nodded. We'll start slow, Boba promised. Start slow, Din thought hazily, because starting slow implied that they wouldn't end slow. But then Boba was running a thumb against Din's wet, open hole and guiding the head of his cock there, and Din couldn't think anymore. Boba slid inside of him in a slow, deep, continuous push. It didn't hurt, not between the oil and Boba's patient preparation. Din's brain fizzled, sparks swarmed behind his eyes.
Good? Boba asked.
And something in his voice told Din that this was the last time he would ask, that Boba was also on the frayed edge of his self-control. Din nodded. His mouth had fallen open, and his breath came in harsh gasps.
Good, he managed.
It was good. He was full, so full, but he was full of Boba, and it felt right.
Stay with me, then, Boba ordered. And then he began to move.
Even like this, Boba was in control. Din was on top of him, could theoretically push himself up and off of Boba, but Din's legs were trembling like a newborn dewback's, and Boba's grip on his hips was bruisingly tight, like Boba was holding Din by the bone, the spirit. Din couldn't go anywhere. All he could do was rock along, mouth open, slack. Boba guided his hips through a rolling motion that had Din biting back a shout, white lightning flashing behind his eyes. He could feel Boba everywhere. His hips, his chest, the throbbing bites at his shoulder, the junction of his collarbone and his neck. Inside him, huge and overwhelming. At the back of his tongue. There you are, Boba growled, rolling Din's hips for him again. Like this, he barely had to thrust. Every shift and roll did the work for him, brushed against a place inside of Din that made fire climb up his spine. All Din could do was hold on. He curled his fingers over Boba's shoulders and whined when Boba moved him again, gently fucking Din on his cock. They were both panting. The air between them was sticky, humid. Bobo was all Din could feel, could smell. He was dizzy with it. Din's cock bobbed with every roll of his hips, leaking. Din let go of Bobo's shoulders to take himself into his left hand, moaning high in his throat. White sparks gathered behind his eyes. He was so close. No, Bobo growled, tearing Din's hand away. Din cried out at the loss of sensation, frustrated, but Bobo made a deep, wordless sound, a snarl Din felt in his bones, and said, low, "You'll take what I give you, Jerrica, do you understand?" Din bared his teeth, sparks fading from his eyes. Bobo, unamused by Din's small defiance, did the worst thing Din could think of. He stopped moving. Bobo slowed his hips and Din's. He had one hand wrapped around Din's hip, fingers pressed to the jut of Din's hip bone, and the other gripping Din's wrist so tightly he could feel the small bones there shift. True pain began to crawl up his arm. His other, his bad hand, still pressed against Bobo's chest, twitched. "I said," Bobo rumbled, "do you understand?" "Yes," Din panted, giving in. "Yes, damn it, I understand." "Good boy," Bobo said, rewarding Din with a long, slow roll of his hips. Din felt like Bobo was going to fuck right through him, like he could taste Bobo's cock on the back of his tongue if he tried hard enough. The thought made his own dick jump without being touched. "Put your hands back on my shoulders," Bobo instructed. "And hold on. Clearly I'm not working hard enough if you can still find the words to be Mircheb." "It can't..." Din started, bringing his hands back to clutch at Boba's shoulders, but Bobo didn't let him finish. Bobo planted both of his feet flat against the bed, something wicked and bright gleaming in his eyes, and fucked up into Din with all his strength. Din did shout, the sound punched out of him. Bobo repeated the motion again and again. He couldn't work up a brutal pace, not like this, not supporting nearly the entire weight of Din's body. But Bobo could still fuck him hard and deep. The wet sound of skin on skin filled the air. Din couldn't hold up his head anymore, couldn't do anything but cling to Boba's shoulders and try to roll his own hips, weakly, bringing himself down to meet Boba's thrusts. Within a handful of thrusts, Bobo had brought Din to the edge again, to white sparks and inevitable heat, pressure building in his belly. "Boba," Din panted. He sounded utterly alien to his own ears, breathy, wrecked. "Bobo, please." Bobo thrust up again and undid Din. He came with a thin cry, slumping against Bobo, sticky cum caught between them. Bobo chuckled. Like this, Din slumped bonelessly over him. Bobo's mouth was close to Din's ear, which Bobo nipped affectionately. "That's it," Bobo crooned. Din shivered. Bobo wasn't finished. He was still fucking him, deep and inexorable, rocking Din back and forth on his cock. "That's it. Just let it happen, Sherry." Din mumbled against the salty skin of Boba's collarbone. He closed his eyes. It was almost nice. Boba was everywhere, scent and sensation, all around Din. All Din had to do was... Bobo took Din's easy submission as his due and shifted suddenly, before Din could so much as protest. He flipped them, rolling over so that Din was pressed against the bed and Bobo was looming over him, their legs tangled together. Din clung to his shoulders like he'd been told, and Bobo hummed in wordless approval. Like this, Bobo could work up to a steady pace. He fucked into Din's body, steadily, deeper and deeper. Din wasn't sure how Bobo could keep going, how every thrust could drag against the raw, oversensitive spot inside him that still sent weak, shivery flickers of heat and pleasure up Din's spine. But Bobo did. Bobo mouthed at Din's ear, at the soft skin he'd already bitten and sucked bruises into. Din bared his neck, letting him, eyes rolling up in his head. Boba's hips stuttered, rhythm failing, and then he came, too, a bolt of wet warmth that Din could feel. Bobo's hips stuttered again, and he pressed his forehead to Din's, shifting them so that they were flush together, skin to skin. They stayed like that for a long moment, just sharing breath. Din felt his heartbeat slowing, vision clearing as he came down from whatever edge he'd been on. Bobo's armor was hot and sticky against his chest. Din wriggled, disgruntled, and Bobo chuckled hoarsely. Hold on, Boba said, and then he went through the very complicated feat of undressing without breaking skin contact, shifting and grumbling and cursing as he got tangled in the straps of his armor, the twists of his robe. Affection swelled in Din's chest, so sharp and sudden he didn't know what to do with it. It dizzied him, left him feeling like he'd been punched, and his breath came in short and fast. Udessi, Udessi, Boba soothed, once he'd kicked off the last of his clothes and flopped down on top of Din, skin touching skin everywhere. He kept up a stream of nonsense words. Well, maybe they weren't nonsense, but Din didn't know what they meant, and traced patterns on the sticky skin of Din's flanks until Din was able to get his breath under control. I'm fine, Din grumbled, the words thick and heavy in his mouth. I'm glad, Boba returned dryly. You okay if I get up for a minute? No, Din thought, not wanting to lose the feeling of Boba's skin on his skin. But he made himself nod anyway. There was still work to do, wasn't there? Some of the urgency had fallen out of Din's head and was probably rolling around on the floor somewhere. But if Boba wanted to find out what Gorga had been planning, what the third man had been ordered to... Din propped himself up on an elbow and did not whine when Boba peeled himself away, rolling off the edge of the bed and padding into the fresh air. Just get up, Din encouraged himself, trying not to feel too cold or bereft at the loss of contact. He wasn't a Mandalorian anymore, but he'd been one for years. Din was a warrior. He didn't need someone to hold him. But Boba was back before Din could do more than plant his feet on the floor, working through the steps of standing up in his head. Boba looked at Din, unimpressed. He had a wet cloth in one hand. Lie back down, Boba grumbled. You've got no business trying to stand and walk around. And let me clean you off a little so you're not uncomfortable in the morning. Lie back, but Gorga, Geeta, Din started, not understanding. Boba huffed and pushed Din on the shoulder, gently enough. Din was so unsteady that he went down anyway, flopping back onto the bed. Boba followed, pressing up against Din again. He used the rag to clean up the worst of the mess between Din's legs, his belly, and then wiped himself down too and settled against Din with a contented noise. Gorga, Boba said, his anger all worn away. We'll wait until the morning. Are you sure? Din asked. He tried not to sound too vulnerable, too open, but wasn't sure that he succeeded. He cleared his throat, made his voice stronger, and said, Because I can go out over the sands and look for others if you need me to, and someone needs to talk to Geeta's mother. She's probably afraid that she didn't come home, and... Boba slapped a hand over Din's mouth, shocking Din into an affronted silence. He nipped Boba's palm, which made Boba grumble and pull away. I'm not a child, Din growled, but he got the message. Boba had no interest in running all over Mos Eisley tonight. Boba wanted to stay here, with Din, at least for a little while. Some kernel of something. Din didn't dare call it simple affection, but didn't want to name it either, in case naming it made the feeling disappear, glowed warm in his chest. You're a menace, Boba muttered, not for the first time. Din decided that it was a term of endearment, like Share or Jarika. War councils later, Din. For now, just enjoy this. With the way Boba had thrown a heavy arm over Din's stomach, with the enticing warmth of Boba's body pressed against Din from shoulder to hip, then again at the knee, Din figured that he probably didn't have much choice. He thought, settling back against Boba. Don't think I mind, either. It was past dawn when they finally made it out of bed and into the fresh air. Din grimaced when Boba gently peeled him off the bed. Din should have argued harder about at least rinsing off in the sonic before they'd fallen asleep. Boba's cloth had cleaned up the worst of the mess, but they were both sticky with dried sweat. Boba manhandled them both into the sonic. It wasn't really big enough for two grown men. Between Boba's bulk and Din's height, they were packed in like krill, putting elbows in each other's stomachs and knees in each other's thighs. But the size of the sonic had its advantages, too. Din finally had Boba just as naked and bare as he was, and took shameless advantage, pressing in close and rolling their hips together. It was a bold move, one Din wouldn't have had the nerve for if he hadn't been still half asleep and half drunk on the smell of Boba's body, on the touch of his skin. Boba indulged him for a while, turning the sonic down to its lowest whisper, guiding Din's hips through lazy rolls. Din could still feel the echo of Boba inside him. Din bit his lip, still emboldened by sleep and by Boba's hands fitted over his hips, and reached back to feel himself. He hissed when his fingers skimmed over his hole. Heat rose in his cheeks. Boba chuckled. "Still open?" he rasped, nosing at Din's jaw. Din nodded, wordless. Boba rumbled. Their lazy rolling seemed less lazy now. Boba's cock was hard against Din's own. "Up for another round?" Boba asked. Still wordless, Din nodded. Boba fucked him slowly there in the cramped, tiny sonic. Neither of them were up to anything strenuous. Boba just guided Din to turn around, chest pressed to the sonic's cool wall, and fucked him like that. The burn was sweet and low and good. Boba didn't bother stretching Din open further, just guided the blunt head of his cock against Din's open hole and rolled his hips until he was fully seated. It was indulgent. Din had never done anything like this before. What they'd done at night, Din seated in Boba's lap, taking a fucking hard and fast. Yes, he'd done that before. Speed had usually been of the essence down in the covert. There wasn't really any privacy down there. But this, only 3 people in the entire galaxy had the access codes to Boba's rooms. This was as private as Din had ever been, and for the first time in his life, he could take his time. Boba was certainly in the mood to do just that, pressing into Din and then pulling out slowly, inch by inch, before driving forward again. Boba wrapped one thick arm around Din's waist, pulling him close. He pressed soft kisses to the edge of Din's shoulder blade, to the knobs of his spine. The fervor of last night, the biting kisses, the urgency was gone, replaced by steady pressure and the rasp of skin on skin. Given that Din's back was still a patchwork of bruises from their flogging, Din appreciated Boba's restraint. Din groaned as Boba slid past that sparking place inside of him, making his cock twitch. "Do you think you can come like this?" Boba asked, the words vibrating against Din's shoulder. Din had to think about it, reaching for coherent thought. It was hard. Gentle, warm fog had enveloped him. It wasn't the all-over floating or flying sensation he'd found at the end of a flogger or with Boba's hand wrapped around his throat. But it was good, nice. "I don't know," Din managed, words thick in his mouth. Maybe?" Boba hummed and pressed a kiss to a particularly sore bruise over one of the ridges of Din's spine. "Do you want to come?" Din had to think about that, too. He didn't need to. He'd come hard enough last night to banish the stress of almost getting blown to pieces. Din wasn't a teenager anymore. He didn't need to come every day, or even every week, to feel full or satisfied. "I get to decide?" Din asked. Boba chuckled. "Not if you don't want to," Boba said. He shifted his angle, bracing his thighs. Din could feel them trembling with the effort of holding himself back. "I can choose." "You choose," Din agreed, letting his head loll forward to hang down. He opened his eyes. His own cock bobbed against his belly, red and neglected, but it felt like such a distant concern that Din wasn't bothered. "Good boy," Boba murmured against the back of Din's neck. "Sorry." "Sweet thing. Hands on the wall, then. Don't come unless I tell you that you can." Boba started fucking Din in earnest then, picking up the pace. It still wasn't as urgent as last night, but Din didn't mind. He felt so full like this, cared for, safe, as Boba worked him over. It didn't take long for the new pace to take its toll on Boba, who slowed and pressed as deep into Din as he could get before stilling and coming with a groan. They stayed like that for a moment, while Boba caught his breath, and then Boba pulled away for a moment, leaving Din to shiver without hands on his skin, before returning with another wet rag. Boba cleaned Din up, then turned the sonic back up to shake away their new layer of sweat. Neither of them touched Din's cock. Din didn't mind. The fog in his head was thick and warm. He didn't protest when Bobo ran a rag over his face, his belly, scraping over the stubble that had grown in overnight, and let Bobo nudge him out of the sonic and back into the room. Din didn't even care that it was approaching daylight and the windows were open, curtains billowing in the breeze. He flopped back down on Boba's bed, content to laze for a few minutes until the warm fog in his head dissipated, then wrinkled his nose. The bed was damp and sticky. Boba followed him out of the fresher and chuckled.
"That's two nights in a row you've made me change my sheets, Jerica," he said, tone heavy with fondness. "Sit up, you're gonna need another trip into the sonic if you stay there much longer."
Din groaned, but did as he was told. He sat up with a sigh. Din could feel all of his thoughts underneath the fog, all of the concerns that needed his attention. They were pushing at him gently. Din sighed. "Where'd my..." "There," he muttered, casting around on Boba's floor for his discarded clothes. Boba chuckled. He hadn't bothered to pull on his clothes yet either, so Din propped himself up on his elbow and looked at him without any urgency. He'd never seen Boba naked in what was approaching full light. He'd only seen Boba's body under the silvery light of the moon or the dim lights in the pool beneath Jabba's tower. Boba had brown skin and more scars than any other living human Din had ever seen. Acid scars had scored their way down the back of his head and across his shoulders, about halfway down his back. Boba had been raked by claws and shot by blasters. He had, at some point, been whipped. Despite that, Boba moved with the easy grace of a very large predator. Generously padded muscles shifted smoothly underneath his skin, and Boba padded around his room like he knew the position of his body all of the time.
"Like what you see?" Boba asked, catching the direction of Din's gaze.
Boba's eyes slid down Din's body too, the bruises, the scars, the half-hard cock. Din flushed. "I do," he said honestly. For some reason, that made Boba look away, a faint flush darkening his own face. Din blinked, surprised. He didn't think that Boba could be embarrassed.
"Nijoha," Boba said. "Put your clothes on. I'll have breakfast sent up, then we can go find Fennec."
The mention of Fennec, of business, of Gorga the Hutt maybe coming from them all, pulled Din out of his foggy thoughts. He nodded and slid off the bed, scooping his clothes up and tugging them on. He didn't armor up fully, choosing instead to just tug on his flight suit and leave a few clasps undone, then joined Boba at the work table. Boba looked Din up and down.
"You're walking well," he observed.
Din flushed again. He could still feel Boba inside him, a faint burn that would, if Din let it, drive him to distraction all day. But fortunately, Din had other hurts, big and small, to distract himself. He could still roll his shoulders and feel the sweet pain of the flogging. He could take in a deep breath and feel Boba's hands imprinted against his hips. He could even flex his fingers and feel the sprain in his right arm, faint now after a night with Bacta on, but still there.
"I," Din said primly, knowing now that Boba could be teased,
"have had bigger." Boba stared at Din for a moment, expression thunderstruck, then laughed.
"You," he said, in the same tone he used when he called Din Jerica or Share, "or something else, Jaren."
Din counted that as a victory. Breakfast came and went quickly. Neither of them wanted to leave Fennec waiting for long. Din finished his breakfast first, washing it down with his customary cup of red tea, then left Boba to finish his own food. Din pulled his armor on piece by piece. He was sore, but he knew that Boba was watching, so he was determined not to show it. Din had just slid the last seals into place when Boba set aside his plate and did the same, gathering the scattered pieces of his armor and fitting them on one by one. They left together, helmets on. Everyone knew by now that Din lived in the same tower as Boba. Gorga's people had known enough to try and shoot Din down, to try and remove him from Boba's arsenal. Din wasn't embarrassed by walking out into the throne room with Boba at his side, not anymore. The throne room was mostly empty.
Fennec was by the throne, talking to Zero in low tones, and Nura was at the bar, wringing her hands. She caught sight of Din and burst into tears. Din sighed.
"I'll go talk to Nura," he said. "You've got Fennec?"
Boba nodded and peeled off.
"Sorry, Fennec," Din thought.
But he was pretty sure that Boba was over the worst of his temper now. He could probably manage a civil conversation with Fennec.
"I am so sorry," Nura said, as soon as Din got within earshot. Her eyes were bright with tears, and her leku were twitching in distress. I just thought that it was some slimo creep. I didn't think that anybody would try to hurt you."
"It's all right," Din said, alarmed by Nura's tears. He held out his arms to show her that he was, more or less, unhurt. "I'm fine. A few bruises, that's all. Geeta got the worst of it, but she's going to be fine, too."
"It's my fault," Nura said, still wringing her hands. Her leku twitched again. "If I just told the boss..."
"It's fine," Din repeated firmly. We think it wasn't supposed to happen last night. The idiots on the ridge just got trigger-happy. You couldn't have known."
"But I..."
"Nura," Din said seriously, "it's fine."
Nura's eyes darted over to Boba.
He's not angry?"
"He's mostly angry that we got hurt," he said. "That he couldn't protect us. He's not mad at you, Nura."
Nura chewed her lip.
"And even if he was," Din said gently, "he doesn't have a rancor. He's not going to throw you to the Sarlacc. You're fine, I promise."
Nura shook her head, sniffling.
"I'm being ridiculous," she admitted. "I know I am, but back in Jabba's day..."
"He's not Jabba," Din said. "You can trust Boba. As long as you don't betray him, he won't hurt you."
Nura looked Din over for a minute.
"You trust him," she said, "don't you?"
That was an easy question to answer. Din had answered it half a dozen times by now.
"I do," said Din.
Nura relaxed.
"Okay then," she said. "And believe me, the next time somebody comes to me with a problem..."
She didn't finish. There was a clang and a shout, some commotion from beyond the throne room, up the stairs, and then the unmistakable sound of a body toppling down a set of steps. Theron hit the floor, flat on his back, dazed and groaning. Blood leaked from his nose. Din had a blaster out and drawn before he even realized that it was Theron, a door guard who'd been thrown. He didn't have to look to know that Fennec and Boba had drawn blasters of their own, too. A shadow crossed the floor, followed by the sound of slow, deliberate footsteps, heavy, booted feet on stone. And Din saw a shoulder appear in his field of view. He fired before the assailant could fully clear the stairs. The bolt sizzled through the air, then bounced off Din's target, the unmistakable sound of struck Beskar ringing in the air, and splashed harmlessly against the palace wall. A Mandalorian stepped down off the bottom of the stairs and surveyed the throne room. The Mandalorian was humanoid and a few inches shorter than Din. Her armor was painted a faded, scuffed black, lined with stripes of peeling yellow down her legs, at her gauntlets, around the edges of her Carta Beskar. A circle of gold glimmered around one side of her visor, like a scope or a crosshair in a rifle sight. Her armor was so dented and chipped in places that the true color of her Beskar shone through, as silver as Din's, and one of her legs had been wrapped with a hasty bandage.
Black armor. Din's mind caught on that. She has black armor.
Din took a step towards her, something in his chest rising, pulling tight, but he stopped when Boba held out a hand. Boba was too far away to grab Din, but Din had gotten so used to listening to Boba that he stopped on instinct, freezing a few meters away from the other Mandalorian.
"Sukui, Mandalorian," Boba rumbled.
He had shifted so that he was in front of Fennec, shielding her with his armor. Din was frozen.
"Who are you?" Boba asked. "What do you want?"
The other Mandalorian looked Boba up and down, then turned her back on him entirely, her visor fixed on Din. I'm with Vizsla, she said, and I need your help.